Welcome to Season 4 of The Farcast, bringing you experts and insiders every week to help you navigate the economic and investing landscape. Now, here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome to The Farcast. I am Michael Farr. Thanks so much for joining us again this week. And for the first time in 2021, how about that? Here we go. New year, 2020 is behind us, though parts of it remain with us, like a bit of annoying chewing gum stuck on the sole of the nation's shoe here as we start into this new year. We're not quite through with it yet. Markets had a great year. Amazing. And of course, as we have now January 5th in the rearview mirror, we have the vote in Georgia. It looks like both of the Senate seats this morning have gone to the Democrats. That gives a 50-50 count in the Senate. That means that Vice President-elect Kamala Harris will have the deciding vote. And that could certainly have an impact on fiscal policy, and we should see higher taxes certainly during the Biden administration. How much? When? Those are big questions. Markets are going to be watching. The NASDAQ, the tech heavy NASDAQ is down sharply on the futures market this morning, Dow Jones Industrial Average up. But those NASDAQ stocks, folks are thinking that investors are thinking that they're going to come under a lot of regulatory pressure, perhaps to break them up, that will have some, actually get some traction. We're trying to understand it all. And when we try to understand anything in the markets, we go to our friend Jim Murio from the floor of the Chicago Exchange. Jim, Happy New Year and welcome back to the Farcast.
Thank you for having me. I like your optimistic take that 2020 is just a little bit of gum left on the shoe. I hope you're right about that, but that's definitely glass half full.
Well, it could be we could have a deep treads on the shoe, and it could take us a while to scrape this one out of there. But, you know, one of the things, Kevin Warsh, Fed Governor Kevin Warsh, was on CNBC this morning. He was saying that the most effective stimulus package, more effective than any stimulus we're going to see, is going to come from the vaccine. And I think, Jim, you know, whether it's second quarter or beginning of the third quarter, we really are able to inoculate massive parts of the U.S. population. I can't imagine anything as stimulative as getting the U.S. animal spirits back moving again.
And I think that is what's going to happen. The vaccine rollout, by the way, if people aren't frustrated by the pace of the vaccine rollout, but they're not really particularly paying attention. And everybody didn't think that the free market could handle it because, you know, obviously it'd be ugly. It could go to the highest bidder. But this is no great shakes having the government roll it out. The first day it was approved on a Friday night. The first people inoculated in Chicago was on Wednesday, and five people were inoculated on the first day. But to your point, by the way, I know I digressed there a little bit, is that, yeah, absolutely. I actually think that come April and May that we're going to explode economically. I do believe there's a chance that when the new president is sworn in, he does some sort of lockdown. So, you know, then he can plant his flag and say that he cured the pandemic, you know, come April, May. But either way, regardless of what it is, I think that we could have an explosion.
Jim, let's look at this. If we see what could be a 5 or 6% GDP growth this year, and that could certainly take stock prices higher, particularly if we get another stimulus bill. Do you have a scenario where stocks just don't perform in 2021? I can't think of one, frankly.
Well, I can't either. And that always scares me a little bit, too. The last
doesn't it talked, scares yeah. the hell out of me.
Right. Last time we talked was the beginning of December. I said I thought there would be a bit of a correction. Instead, we've gotten mostly sideways for December, a little bit of a rally in the I'm talking about NASDAQ, the leaders. There's been the Russell's performed very, very well. I like that, by the way. I like the fact that we're rotating from the NASDAQ into the Russell. And I think when I see this morning, you know, everybody's saying, oh, well, tech's getting pummeled because, you know, that's they're going to be regulated. I'm not sure I believe that the Democrats are going to start going after tech in any sort of meaningful way, considering those are the people in some ways that helped with their campaign quite a bit. So I don't really understand that. And I think in general, the market has handled the Georgia runoffs better than I thought it would, which to me is another mark on the positive side of the whiteboard of things that are good. And I think that rates are going to stay low. Government's going to keep spending. It's terrifying to me that we've embraced modern monetary theory, but I do think it can go on for some time. To me, I always think that the spending that they're doing is like somewhere there's a point where the globe is going to turn its back on the dollar. And it's like a waterfall that we keep sailing at night closer and closer to. We're probably miles away, but by the time we're, you know, a half mile away, and I don't know much about poles of waterfalls, but by the time we realize that we're at the point of no return, it's there's nothing that can be done. And if the dollar starts to get hit hard, you know, all over the globe, then you know, we realize that MMT was stupid, which, by the way, spoiler alert, MMT is stupid.
Spoiler alert, folks, Urio says MMT is stupid. Folks, Farr says MMT is moronic. I want to even make a stronger comment and take it even stronger than Urio there. Yeah, okay, so Jim, let me just tell you what I heard Kevin Warsh say on CNBC that I thought was very interesting. He said that when the Treasury, when the Federal Reserve is buying all of the treasuries, which is a part of MMT and suppressing rates and keeping rates low, other assets get to go up. And if you think about what we just said, a GDP growth of 5 or 6%, and then you think about a one handle on the 10-year U.S. Treasury, that's a suppressed asset. We're keeping that artificially low. And at some point in the future, other countries and other investors are going to start to leave the U.S. Treasury for better returns in other places. Then what do you do?
Well, it's funny when you say it, is that when they take away the yield on the U.S. curve, one of the reasons they do that is to force people further and further out the risk curve into riskier things. And I think, you know, they'd love for that money to end up in the U.S. stock market, and to a certain degree it has. But then that you start looking at things now that express a bit of a mistrust for cavalier currency policies being implemented domestically. And that's things like, you know, Bitcoin going through the roof. To me, above 20,000, that first part of the move was all about a mistrust in the currency. But the last, you know, 10,000, let's call it, is definitely a fear of missing out. But I'm looking, and I'm sure I talked to you about this a month ago, because I've been hammering this for a while, has been the silver trade. To me, the silver kind of sits in a couple different camps. One, it's a bit of a dollar hedge. Two, it's your recovery play too, because silver's a little bit in the industrial camp. Obviously, it's mostly in the precious camp. And I've been long silver, and I think that's a trade. But I gave a speech at the New Orleans Investment Conference a couple months ago about hedging dollar risk, and things like the Australian dollar, the Swiss franc, silver, gold, copper, Bitcoin are all things that you're supposed to be looking at if you think that they're being too cavalier with the dollar. And I absolutely think they're being too cavalier with the dollar.
Well, and markets agree with you, Jim, that they're being too cavalier with the dollar. And Kevin Warsh said today on CNBC he expected the dollar against a broad basket of other currencies, foreign currencies, to continue to fall. And indeed, it's falling this morning. We're versus the euro, we're 123. Now, it hasn't been a year since we were at 105 or 106. And ladies and gentlemen, that means if you go to dinner in Paris, the same dinner that was going to cost you $105 earlier this year is now going to cost you $123. And take that higher. Whatever was going to cost you $1 million is now going to cost you a whole hell of a lot more. So, you know, you can do the math here, and it's not comfortable math, is it, Jim?
No, and when you're comparing right now the dollar against the euro, just think of that in a broader context for a second, because the euro, they have as great a debt loads as we do, as does the yen. That's why I don't like to look at the dollar versus the basket, because basically that's just against the euro and the yen, which are other central banks in regions that you're having a difficult time as well. So that's why I pick out some other currencies. And if you change the way you look at the dollar and start looking at a basket of other stuff, the story is much worse without. But there's one thing I point out, like we're talking about this potential cataclysmic dollar event, which, by the way, I think is a low probability event. And if it happens, I think it's far off in the future. So in the meantime, that could be stock market positive. I think a lot of people who just look at the surface and think that we're talking about something terrible that could happen, that automatically affects the stock market negatively. Well, not in the early stages. The dollar weakness, the U.S. stock market is one of the things in a weird way that's kind of a dollar hedge. And I think that's one of the reasons it rallied so hard.
Yeah, I think so. So, and this, what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, it isn't something that we're going to trip over here in the next quarter or even this year. This is something that's looming, but I think you could start to see valuations drop and shift, and you're going to need to watch. There are going to be plenty of signposts along the way, and you want to pay attention here. Jim, as you look to invest in 2021, we're seeing tech pull back this morning. Do you buy it at some point in here? You're going to remain an investor. What do you like?
Well, here's what I was talking about on Twitter with a lot of people yesterday. And I the silver thing is obvious, and I like that. And some people say, well, what about the gold miner? Sure, I'm fine with all those kind of things. But I started buying the integrated oil names yesterday. And again, I don't make recommendations because I don't know what people's risk tolerance or how deep their pockets are. But I'll tell you what I'm doing. I started buying the integrated oil names yesterday and plan to continue to do that, even with the results of the Georgia runoff, which hurts it a little bit. There's a couple things, because we talked about the explosion again, come, I think, April or May. I think it's earlier than most people do, where the economy starts hitting on all cylinders again. I also saw these yesterday, talked about cutting production a little bit, which boosted the price of oil. And they also pay reasonable dividends, too, when juxtaposed against a zero interest rate environment starts to look good, too. And I know that that relationship existed before. But when things start to come into favor, people start grading the same things they saw 6 months ago a little bit differently. I think people are going to like that dividend compared to low rates.
Yep. So in general, though, cautiously optimistic for the year. You think markets are up 10, 15, 20% this year for stocks?
I think it's going to be a good year for stocks. As I said at the beginning of December, I think there is going to be a bit of a pullback first. I thought it would be between 5 and 8%. I still think there's a chance of that. And I think the indication of that will be if the NASDAQ trades below, let's call it, 11,800-ish. If it trades below there, I will think that, and that's a couple percentage points below where we are right now. I think that'll be an indication that it's a 5 to 7% pullback. And then I think you do buy it. And again, the pullbacks don't have to have necessarily a big fundamental reason. They can just be that all the good news has been priced in. There's very little money right now on the sideline to chase it. And then all of a sudden we trim the hedges a little bit. That's all I'm talking about.
You know, and our friend Art Cashin, God bless him, says that you really do need to be nimble. These pullbacks in this age of monetary policy where there's so much liquidity have been very brief. You catch them or you don't catch them. So we haven't seen anything or an environment where a prolonged downturn really has had much of an opportunity. So you have to be ready, don't you?
There's no doubt about it. And those moments when you're supposed to buy it are the moments where everything in your brain is telling you not to buy it and that it's going to zero.
Run.
Hey, remember, fear is so much more of a potent emotion than anything else. And that's one of the most is that we've talked about this on the show before. And I hearken back to George Costanza from Seinfeld when he was pretending to be a stockbroker. And he said his method was when every shred of sense that he has says to sell it, he buys it. And I think that that is not a bad system. I think that we learn a lot from Seinfeld.
We learn a lot from Seinfeld. Don Hayes is a strategist. He was with Wheat First Securities, was with First Union. And Don's from Tennessee, and he talks like this. He's got one of these accents you could cut. And Don said that when you buy or sell a stock, you should be in a full-on body sweat, a full-on body sweat. Now, not just a full body sweat, and I'm not sure I understand the difference in the South between a full body sweat and a full on body sweat, but a full on body sweat, if you're sweating when you're selling it, you're doing the right thing. So,
well, it's warmer down in the South, so they probably sweat a little bit more than we do, but I don't know, but I think he's right.
I think he's right. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Murio is managing director of TJM Institutional Services. You don't find a more experienced trader anywhere, and he's our great friend. Jim, thanks so much for being with us again on the Farcast. We're going to talk more this year, buddy, and thanks for your insights.
Thank you, Michael.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Dan Mahaffey. We're going to figure out what happened in Georgia, what's going on in Washington with the certification of this election today. When we come back on the Farcast. Please stay with us.
The Farcast is sponsored in part by Positano Restaurante in Bethesda, Maryland, 4940 Fairmont Avenue. Positano Restaurant, great Italian food. And now, back to the show, and your host, Michael Farr. Welcome back to the Farrcast, and now here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back to the Farrcast. As we cover Wall Street, Washington, and the world each week for you and investors, and trying to bring some value with insights into what's going on around the world and in D.C. and how that's going to affect markets and the economy, I have to confess that we stopped the Farrcast yesterday, which was the 6th on a Wednesday, and we are coming back on Thursday with our friend Dan Mahaffey. We wake up this morning having witnessed the United States Capitol under siege with gunshots fired, 4 people dead, all of Congress evacuated along with Vice President Pence. They were returned into their various chambers of governance into the People's Halls of Governance, and they certified the election results, the Electoral College votes, and Joe Biden from Delaware as the next president of the United States in 13 days. All of those things happened overnight and yesterday, and one of the most upsetting things I've ever witnessed as a fifth generation Washingtonian. Dan, what I saw yesterday goes on to the list, which has become longer in the past year, of things that were heretofore unimaginable by most Americans. So, Dan, tell us what you saw, tell us what this means, and tell us the progress from here. Where do we go and how do we go forward as a democracy, as a country? Stock markets were up.
Michael, I think we've seen moments of truly unprecedented and shocking scenes that are ones you don't see in U.S. history, lest you think of times like the Civil War or Pearl Harbor or 9/11. The level, and while we may not have had the same loss of life or property, the turning point that I think we have to see in American history now is not the discussions we're having right now are not about capital gains, upper rates. They're not about the deficit. They're not. We can have those disagreements on economic and political policy. But right now, this is really, are you on the side of democracy and the rule of law, or are you on the side of this mob and the forces that have been unleashed in American politics over the past 4 years that we've seen from Charlottesville, from the Proud Boys groups being told to stand ready, stand down, however that was phrased, and to the inability yesterday, the back and forths we had of whether the president would actually mobilize the National Guard when he saw his supporters take over the People's House. That was not, the Capitol was stormed, but we should all feel that like each of our own houses was stormed in a way.
That, yes, no question.
That is the symbol of that, and there's going to be tons of whataboutism and both sidesing of this as we go back into our media echo chambers, but I think we need to be very consistent in, one, the difference we saw, and there's going to be investigations, and we can get into that, too, of why there were only 100 Capitol Police available yesterday when there were thousands deployed during the summer, what the differences were, why we got to this point. There will be time for that, but this is a more fundamental assault on democracy itself, on the institutions and procedures that we have. And for the first time in our country's history, we cannot say that the transition from one president to another has been a peaceful process.
Dan, I'm actually, as I listen to you, coming up with a fairly encouraging message here, that after one of the more desperate assaults on the democracy of the United States, and even without the support of the president, Democracy survived. The process prevailed. Our elected representatives came together largely as a majority, not without division, but as a majority, and democracy prevailed, and the Constitution was upheld. And so perhaps yet again in our nation's history, we've seen the strength of America and the strength of this country. Am I being too Pollyannish?
I think you're positive in the sense that we saw the bravery first of those police defending the people's chamber, the House. We saw the resolution of our officials to come back that night and finish the business. But make no mistake, we see the overnight surveys. 45% of Republican voters approve of that storming of the Capitol. There are strengths in our society, but there is also a fundamentally authoritarian, anti-democratic zeitgeist that has been unleashed, and we've seen it in the streets. It was not just Washington. State capitals around the country were besieged by militia-type groups, and this is a serious issue that the Biden administration will have to confront, but all of us in positions of influence need to ask hard questions about this and ensure that we learn the lessons from this day and rebuild, because someone better organized, someone smarter, all these things over the past few weeks has shown just how fragile these institutions they've held, but we've seen just how fragile they are.
My friend Greg Valliere this morning wrote that Joe Biden is the perfect antidote, that there's no politician in either party who has what Biden brings, that he's soft-spoken, patriotic, and relatively moderate with a refreshingly modest ego. Far from perfect, but he's not the anti-Trump either. How do you see Joe Biden fitting this moment? How does he begin his presidency? What are the implications? And is he the right antidote, as Greg Valliere suggests?
Well, I think he's an antidote in one sense, where it's no longer the politics of one person driving our sense of the presidency. The presidency is the one job where, as soon as you arrive, you should stop thinking about yourself and the country. Not think about yourself, but instead think of the country. That did not happen yesterday. In the Oval Office, we saw the provocation of one individual, President Trump, drive this anger. Now, to have a president who does not drive that vitriol, that anger, that will be a great step forward. I think Biden, his
seems
style,
like an awfully low bar, Dan.
Yeah, it
awfully
is an awfully low bar. We've talked about the idea of what it's like to have a presidency where you're not waking up in a cold sweat each morning to see what the overnight tweet was. That's going to be a difference to our politics. The idea that deal making is not held hostage because of one individual's whims on these issues we need to tackle. And finally, someone who does not feel, again, beholden to the elements of our of the far right or the far left on either side. We will have a politician who's finally sees that his coalition came from largely the center of American politics, but that will take time, and we still have yet to figure out, and we'll see. He'll face the parallel universes of information chambers that, again, what information universe drove people to think that the answer was to violently storm the Capitol. That ecosystem is not going to go away on January 20th.
Dan, we've got about 3 minutes here, so I want to make sure that we can cover some other topics and give our listeners a look forward about what we can expect. Can you believe that, Dan, that you and I have now just spent 8 minutes in discussion and have not yet talked about the race in Georgia that went to two Democrats? A Republican state has now been won by two Democratic Party members into the Senate. And now the Senate is going to be divided 50-50, with Vice President Harris having the a deciding vote on several issues, should they be completely divided by party. Tell us what that means, Dan. What did Georgia say? How did that happen? And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, a year ago, Dan Mahaffey said we were going to have a blue wave. He has been consistent about that. Maybe it's more of a blue tide, but certainly, Dan, the majority kind of held. You've been right on this.
The majority held, and look, it's the dynamics of that race. We could spend time on it, but let's look forward. Congratulations to Warnock, Ossoff, and then most importantly, congratulations to Joe Manchin. You are now one of the most important senators in history. The other thing I heard is don't worry too much about Kelly Loeffler. She bought stock in Warnock before the race.
That's marvelous. So shame on you, Dan Mahaffey. But damn, that's funny. Isn't it awful? We can't laugh at anything anymore.
I hope we got to get back to that.
I hope you object. We got to have
a little laughter about this. But so look, the 50-50 means he can move his cabinet forward, judges, appointments. That path is much clearer. When it comes to these big legislative items, look, that you'll get agreement on infrastructure. We'll see more stimulus. I think that's why markets are really positive on this, because the things we can agree on, big economic measures, those will get through. There won't be the blockading of some of the things that the administration wants to get done to that extent. But they're not going to go bold. You don't have a Green Deal, New Deal in a 50-50 Senate. You don't completely undo the tax cuts in a 50-50 Senate. So it makes the concerns about a blue wave far more palatable when it's, you know, perhaps a blue tide pool.
Dan, what about those? I mean, people are talking about Joe Manchin as a more moderate Democrat and being able to sort of side with the Republicans at times. What about those more left-leaning Republicans? Don't they become equally important? The Susan Collins of the world, who may say, oh, no, I'm actually going to vote with the Democrats on this, and that majority will skew left.
Right. Collins, Portman, Murkowski, there's ways you have this path to 50 or even 60, depending on the measure. And think, too, that, you know, some of this realignment we might see and so much of this, we'll see how the coming weeks determine what segments open up in the Republican Party. Because right now I see in the Senate, there's Democrats, there's Mitch McConnell's establishment Republicans, and then there's the wild card people with the 2022 and 2024 aspirations who have to consider the Trump hold on their base.
So when we look at the Senate, it certainly does seem that policy is going to be made with some old-fashioned horse trading. After last night, it does seem that the Republic has indeed survived again. The Constitution was upheld. No matter what you think of the folks in Washington and members of Congress, in the end, they did their jobs last night. So we have reason to be hopeful. And I think our faith in the ultimate strength of democracy in the United States is upheld. And we have every reason, I think, to continue to be optimistic as we proceed down the road of history together. I hope, Dan, we will be able to do it more together in 2021 than we have in recent years, and that we can come together more in the future. I mean, we are desperately in need of a coming together.
Exactly. And it shows just how we need to take a step back from some of the extreme language that we have tolerated or laughed at in some ways on either side, and realize that the democracy is a very fragile thing that requires our care and tending to. So I share your optimism, because I think we've learned a powerful lesson in the past 24 hours.
Your insights help us every week. Dan Mahaffey from the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress and the senior political analyst for the Farcast here in a new year of Farcast 2021.
Happy New Year, 2021.
Here we go. And, you know, at some point, Dan, we may even talk about Brexit. So
one day.
Well, it doesn't go away, so we'll get there. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to come back. Please stay with us.
Thank you for joining us on the Farcast. And now, back to your host, Michael Farr.
Thanks so much for being with us again this week on the Farcast as we begin 2021. It's late in the afternoon, not quite to the close for the stock markets here on January the 7th. We had this great attack on Capitol Hill yesterday. The Congress continued to meet into the wee hours of this morning and indeed certified the election results from the Electoral College and indeed certified that Joe Biden from the state of Delaware will be the next president of the United States, and he will be inaugurated in 13 days. Things have not settled down completely in Washington, but I feel somewhat optimistic that indeed the Republic survived, that there was indeed an assault on democracy, on the People's House, on Capitol Hill, and the right things happened. I think that children will study this for generations to come, this day, January 6th, 2021, and try and parse out what happened. I think those of us who witnessed it and lived through it will be answering questions from our grandchildren studying in school saying, Pop-Up and Nana, can you tell me what that was like? So try to remember, because I think it was a very important day in U.S. history. I've been on the phone all day long today, folks. One phone call after another. My voice is getting a little raspy. I imagine you know how much I talk on the Farcast. It doesn't change much when I get off the Farcast. I've noticed something in 2020 and now 21 that I do differently than I've ever done it before. And that is that when I say goodbye to people, I also say, be safe. Please be safe. Please stay safe. And I say that in person and I say it on the phone. I'm even writing it now in emails and texts. Be safe. When I look at the markets going ahead for 2021, that's really going to be my message to you. Please be safe. Markets are trading at all-time highs, making new highs again today for the Dow, the S&P, and NASDAQ. Prices are high. The expectations are that the GDP, the gross domestic product of the U.S., will continue to rebound in 2021 from those lows, those dismal lows at the collapse of the coronavirus in the spring and second quarter of 2020. So we're not where we were at the beginning of 2020 by any stretch, and GDP could indeed grow 5 to 6% in 2021. With 5 to 6% growth in the broad economy, with another fiscal stimulus package coming from government, with earnings expectations already targeted at almost 22% for the year, it certainly feels like stocks have many strong headwinds behind them, pushing them forward, and you would certainly expect good investment results for 2021. At all-time highs, you have to be cautious. So my message will be, once again, be safe. After yesterday, our nation needs some healing. Everyone I have talked to today has been upset about what they saw either in person or in television or on media and the internet yesterday that happened on Capitol Hill. And not just Americans, by the way. Friends from overseas have been sending me notes about how horrible it was to see America in such a dire situation, that they were concerned for our democracy. And we were all concerned, I think. As we look forward to 2021, I have hopes that we can come together. I hope that we will indeed heal, and heal not only physically, which we need as we get these vaccines, but heal as a country. Heal as a culture, and perhaps find ways to come together to reach out to, once again, vaccine in arm, I'll be able to shake all of your hands again and maybe even get to hug a bunch of you. I'm kind of a hugger, believe it or not. Don't look like one on TV, but I am. And I think we need a America this year that does a little bit more of that. The vaccine is not in my arm, and I continue to need to be careful. So do you all. So I'm going to end the Farcast this week once again with a very simple message to each and every one of you. It is a very heartfelt, be safe, be careful, and don't take on too much risk, please. We're going to be working very hard at Farm Miller in Washington to look after our clients, our friends. If we can help you, it would be a great honor and privilege. We appreciate you listening to the Farcast. We hope you'll share us again this year on social media. Tell your friends about us. If there's anything you'd like to hear us cover this year, hjennings@farmmiller.com. He'd be happy to help. And by the way, here's one more human interest tidbit. Harry Jennings was a student and a proctor in my dormitory where I worked at the University of the South in Sewanee, Tennessee. He went to St. Andrews, Sewanee. He was a junior in high school, and I was a junior in college, and they hired me to go run a dormitory. I've known Harry that long. I used to listen to and do what Harry told me to do some 40 years ago. I'm still listening to Harry. So thank you for listening to us. We'll be back next week if I listen to Harry properly for another 7 days. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend. Don't ever lose faith in this great country. God bless each one of you and God bless America. I'm Michael Farr.
Thank you for listening in to this week's first of the year edition of the Farcast. Thanks to Michael's guests, Jim Urio and Dan Mahaffey. And thanks to Stephanie Link, who made every effort to join us, but with the turmoil of the last 48 hours, we weren't able to schedule a recording time. We will schedule Stephanie again soon and get her insight into the opportunities and the threats that she sees in the emerging investing landscape. We'd love to hear from you. We try to respond to all of your notes and suggestions every week, and you can reach us at hjennings@farmmiller.com. Let us know any questions you have and topics you'd like to hear us cover. The Farcast comes to you weekly and is produced by Michael Farr and Harry Jennings and is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and all major podcast platforms. We would like to remind you that the Farcast podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal or financial advice. Any mention of specific security should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell. And please be aware that past performance is not a guide to the future performance of any index fund, security manager, or strategy. Please review with a financial professional before you make any investment decision. And if we can be of assistance at Farm Miller in Washington, please reach out to me at hjennings@farmmiller.com. We are here to help, and I'll be happy to put any of our listeners in touch with one of our investment professionals for a complimentary review of your portfolio and your investment goals. Take care, stay safe, and stay healthy. From all of us at the Farcast, we wish you a happy and healthy new year. And we'll be back with you next week as we continue our fourth season. Go beyond the headlines every week with the Farcast, Wall Street, Washington, and the world.